Hey, sorry to break in right in the beginning of the show, but just as I was uploading today's podcast, there was some late-breaking hemp news. So the USDA just announced that the Plant Variety Protection Office, the PVPO, will start accepting applications of seed-propagated hemp for plant variety protection. That's a big deal, right? You can read more about it at LancasterFarming.com. Anyway, here's today's show.
To create a more long-term, more resilient agricultural framework, it has to be a group of growers working together collectively, not just everybody going it alone.
That's Ben Davies, a hemp farmer in Bartow, Pennsylvania, where he and his wife Kara own and operate Wild Fox Provisions, which until last year had been a pretty standard organic produce and pastured meats farm. But an industrial hemp research permit changed all that. This is the Lancaster Farming Industrial Hemp Podcast. I am your host, Eric Harlock, and on today's show, we talk to Ben Davies about Wild Fox Provisions hemp operation, how they got started, what their first year of growing hemp was like, their plans for this year's growing season, and what they're doing to educate and empower other small hemp farmers in the state. We'll get to that interview in just a sec, but first, we have a few things from the world of hemp to discuss. Okay, first thing. On last week's show, we talked to the people who are building the Hemp House on Wheels, and I feel I committed a major breach of podcasting etiquette by not mentioning that they also have a podcast, and one that you might really enjoy since you're interested in hemp. Their show is called The Hemp Entrepreneur Podcast with Drew Oberholzer and Cameron McIntosh. And just a reminder that you can see the Hemp House on Wheels next month in the Canopy Growth Hemp Industrial Park New York exhibit at the Cannabis World Congress and Business Expo. The show runs from May 29th to June 1st at the Javits Center in Manhattan. Okay, the next thing. As you are probably aware, there's not a lot of crop yield data available on hemp because it's such a new crop for U.S. farmers. And that kind of data is what is needed to set up a federal multi-peril crop insurance program. The National Hemp Association is working with a company called AgriLogic to get the ball rolling on crop insurance, and they need your help. So if you are a hemp farmer and are willing to share your yield data, go to bit.ly/hempdata, bit.ly/HEMPDATA. So you go to the link, you fill out the form, and then there's instructions there on what to do with the form once you've filled it out. So this will help the entire industry, so please lend a hand if you can. I will have a link to the form on the show page for this episode at LancasterFarming.com. Okay, moving on. So I'm in the process of putting together future shows with some interesting people in the industry. Next week, I'm talking to the folks at the Pennsylvania Department of Agriculture about the hemp program. So if you've got questions for them about permitting or variety zones or whatever, send them to me. I'd be curious what you want to know. You know, what can I ask them that will help you? So you can email me podcast@LancasterFarming.com. Okay, so stay tuned, and in just a sec, we'll get into the interview with Ben Davies from Wild Fox Provisions. Ben Davies, yeah. Welcome to the Lancaster Farming Industrial Hemp Podcast. Will you introduce yourself for us?
Sure. Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure. So I am a farmer with my wife, Kara. We started farming in Montgomery County, just a few miles away from here, 8 years ago. And now we're just came across the border here into Berks County about 5 years ago. And we have a organic farm. We raise chicken, pork, lamb, a little bit of beef. We sort of had a hiatus on egg production, but we're getting back into it a little bit here on a small scale. We started as a vegetable CSA and growing a wide variety of organic vegetables. And now we also sell at the Emmaus Farmers Market in Emmaus, Pennsylvania. And we have sold to a bunch of restaurants in the greater Lehigh Valley region historically. And we just started growing hemp last year in 2018.
How did you decide to start growing hemp?
Well, one of the things that we've done over the years is growing microgreens. And this is something that we're kind of taking a break from right now just to kind of streamline our business. But my original intention was to grow hemp microgreens. And I had over the years tried to buy some hemp seeds and start them, figuring that they wouldn't work. And of course they didn't, because they're all sterilized. You know, you can buy intact hemp seeds at the store, but they're all sterilized. And so then I was like, oh, this would be that opportunity to do it for real. And so that's why we started looking into the program last year. And last year, as you know, was the first year that the Pennsylvania program included CBD in the wording, you know, in the permit. So it was all new to me, and I started looking into the CBD side of things, and I just became really fascinated with it, and sort of the pieces started to click, I think maybe more easily for me than for some, because I'm familiar with farming and plants and genetics and things like that. So it's all part of the farming ecosystem. And so I got super excited about that and continued to look into it, and was like, oh my word, this is like the opportunity of a century, kind of, you know, to be able to, you know,
get in start on ground floor.
Yeah. And I'm not really interested in growing like marijuana or recreational cannabis or anything like that, but this seemed like, wow, there's so many things that this plant has to offer that we can access through the hemp program. And obviously for a small farm like ourselves, we don't have millions of dollars of capital available to like get a medical license or a recreational license or something like that, and we're not going to move to another state to go just to do that. So snowballed from there.
What was that first year like? Like, what was the permitting process like? Where did you get your seeds? And then,
the permitting, I've written like grants or, other kind of government program type paperwork before. So it felt like the permitting process was pretty easy. Obviously it wasn't cheap in the grand scheme of things, but the seed problem was the problem, because for me, I really wanted, I should back up and say we did source a couple different genetics for the microgreen production, so we did experiment with that last year. That didn't work out, and we can get into that if you want, we also did source some high CBD genetics through a connection. We were able to bring those in, import those through Jamaica. And the four varieties that we acquired for the microgreen, the salad green experimenting, was with the Pennsylvania Hemp Industry Council. We worked with them on their seed order. Unfortunately, three of those varieties were treated with fungicides, so we couldn't grow those for food consumption, and especially because we're an organic farm. And then also, unfortunately, the one variety that we had left, which was, you know, a seed fiber crop type genetic that we were going to use for the microgreens production, had like 40% germination rate, so it was really poor germination, and we basically just had to scrap that whole project. And then because of the existing international seed sourcing scenario, it just made it kind of impossible for us to get a new batch of seed for the season. Mm-hmm. So that the whole salad green project kind of got put on hold, and we might, you know, try and reignite that.
You think there's a market for that?
I mean, just I don't know what kind of national demand there is for it, but I know that our customers would enjoy it probably. Mm. Our vegetable right. customers. we were able to get like a cherry wine type genetic through that Jamaica source, and that worked well for us. It was
so how many plants did you have last year, or how much acreage?
Yeah, so just being the fact that we are already a fully functioning farming operation, we wanted to just ease into this. We didn't want to go all in on like many acres, so we just planted 1 acre of the CBD hemp crop last year. And I guess it was about between 3,000 and 4,000 seeds that we started in the greenhouse. They were not feminized genetics, so we ended up having to just plant them all at a closer spacing, mm-hmm. and then we culled the males out of the field okay. during the season once they started to show their sex.
So what was the spacing like in the field once you...
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't ideal. It was a little bit sparse because there would be... Some of the plants would be closer together because they were both females, and then some of them would be further apart because we had pulled a male out from that. So the spacing wasn't super ideal. Because of the seed sourcing scenario and the... And then just the fact that we were trying to wait for the plants to show their sex before, because we were hoping we would just not plant any male plants. But after a while, it was just like, these plants are getting way too big. We need to get them in the field. So we ended up planting the first and second week in July.
Okay.
which in some cases you would think is late, but I mean, we have decent soil that we've been managing organically, for 5-6 years now, and we already have all the tools and equipment and supplies to do this, and that's, I didn't mention that, but one of the reasons why we felt this was a no-brainer for us, because we already have all the systems in place to grow this crop.
Did you run drip line?
Yeah, we laid plastic mulch beds, and we ran drip lines in those beds, and we irrigated them with the drip lines, but although last year we didn't really have to irrigate much.
That's a rainbow.
But we planted at 3.5 foot spacing and then culled out the males, like I said.
Okay.
So the plants got huge though by the end of the season. They were just, it was, in some cases you couldn't even really walk in between the rows because the plants were just, it was just a forest of Christmas trees basically.
How is that experience going to inform what you do this year?
I mean, it informs everything that we do, obviously, but we definitely are planting at a wider spacing. We're only growing feminized genetics or from clones. And so that way we won't have to, I expect that we'll have a few male plants because not all feminized right. genetics are 100% perfect. And that's not a problem. We'll be scouting for those, and then hopefully we won't have any hermaphrodites, but that's something we'll be keeping an eye out for as well. The systems that we did last year are pretty much the same as what we're going to do this year. I did a lot of research and before leading into the season, and so I feel pretty good about what we did last year and the way that we grew the plants, and we're pretty much doing the same thing, just tweaking it all, in little ways all along the way.
Further?
Yeah, we'll be planting at 5 foot spacing this year. That was what we intended to do last year, but like I said, we couldn't do that because we just needed to plant them. So
what was harvest like?
We've never harvested hemp before or cannabis or anything, so we had a couple crew members that were already, on our crew for the vegetable operation that were involved, and then we had a few more people involved in helping harvest, some family members. My father-in-law was probably our MVP. He like was here like every day for, 2 weeks or something. The genetics that we had grown were basically open pollinated genetics, and for listeners who don't know what that means, normally when you have a hybrid genetic, you have two different parent plants that are always being, those genetic lines are maintained by the breeder in order to create this hybrid genetic. And this is true for any vegetable plant, any annual plant. And the point in doing that is creating very specific genetic traits in that genetic that you're going to sell to producers, and that creates a more stable, predictable crop. The genetics that we were able to get were just the only genetics we could access that were high CBD producing genetics. And so beggars can't be choosers. So we just, you know, used them, and they were very unstable genetics in that they different. Some of the plants matured in like September, and some of them didn't really even mature by the time we finished harvesting in the end of October. So the harvest season was a very wide window of time because the genetics were so diverse within that population. And, you know, that's not something that is abnormal for open pollinated genetics. Basically, you could call them heirloom genetics or something like that, like an heirloom tomato or something. But this year, the genetics that we're growing are very well-bred, stable genetics. So we expect to have a more concentrated harvest window. The way we harvested was all by hand, just basically cutting whole plants down. And then we had shipping container. We retrofitted one of our greenhouses, and we also retrofitted our garage with dehumidifiers and curtains and like cables to hang the plants. So we were hanging whole plants, and then the bulk of the harvest was clipping the branches off the plants and just hanging the branches to dry. Mm-hmm. And then we had a bunch of circulation fans and dehumidifiers running to help pull that humidity out of there. Because as you know, it was a very wet season, a lot of rain, a lot of precipitation, high humidity.
How did you know when to start harvesting? Was that based on the look of the plant, or were you testing all the time?
Yeah, we were doing, I would prefer moving forward to be able to like look at the maturity of the plant and for that to really have a direct, directly imply that it's time to harvest. But I think that it would be unwise to not be testing in this style of growing. So we were testing we were taking flower samples and testing them weekly.
Okay.
To monitor the THC in the plants.
Where did you do that testing?
So we actually, there were no labs in Pennsylvania. So we actually were just sending samples to labs outside of the state.
Okay.
To get them tested, which was probably not quite kosher, but we wanted to stay compliant, and we wanted to make sure that we knew what we were doing, and that we could make judicious decisions about how we're raising the crop. And so all of the labs in PA got shut down for some reason, that they couldn't test hemp right leading into harvest season last year. I have no idea why that is. I have ideas, but we were kind of left high and dry. All of the hemp farmers in Pennsylvania were. So I'm sure that there were others that were probably doing that same thing, because we still needed to have some kind of data on what was going on inside the plant.
Well, who made that decision? Did that come down from the Department of Ag?
So we were just notified by the labs that there's a couple labs that in Pennsylvania that test the marijuana program there. They're the third party certified labs for the testing. And so they are testing all the flower samples for the marijuana labs, who are required to do the testing. And they just said they were notified that they were not allowed to be testing hemp in the same facility as the marijuana. So,
So do you think they have that figured out for this year?
As far as I know, that is not figured out. As far as I know, that mandate still remains in effect. But there's quite a few operations that I've heard are setting up labs to do testing, and especially like a lot of the companies that are setting up extraction facilities, they pretty much always would have in-house testing anyways. So I'm hoping that we were in conversation with a couple different groups right now to try and make sure that we can
get tested.
Yeah, and then worst case, we may just like buy a unit ourselves or something in order to. It's pretty important, you know, to know. To know that information.
I heard a joke at one of the hemp grower info sessions a couple weeks ago. What's the difference between hemp and marijuana? 1 week.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, there's a lot, probably a lot of ways to answer that question.
Yeah, but you know, because the, you know, the you have to harvest it at the right time or the THC is going to spike.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, so last year you harvested, you have everything drying in the trailers in the basement, and then what's the next step? How did you process?
So then we did, my dad is... you know, a tinkerer and engineer, etc. And so he did make a bucker machine that sucks the branches through and strips off all like the flower bud and leaf material. So we had that. We just ended up basically setting up, standing on like chairs, basically everyone around a like a big sling bag or and then just stripping by hand the branches into the sling bags. It just seemed to go faster that way than having to use the bucker machine. But we may, you know, we may be able to continue to try to refine that system and automate that to make it more, to make it work more efficiently this year. And then, so then we just stored it and we were able to get, we have kind of like a successive series of goals, hypothetical goals, because like, again, we've never done this before. So, all right, if we can succeed at this, then like this would be the next goal. So obviously harvesting a crop is the first goal, or maybe the first goal is, you know, not letting the plants die and then not letting the, and then not letting the THC go over the, you know, legal limit because obviously we want to harvest a crop. So we achieved all those things, got a dried, harvested, stripped product. And our yield was not as good as I would expect it to be, just because a lot of the, like, going back to the genetic spectrum conversation there, I mean, we had such a wide variety of genetic phenotypes, is what they're called in the field, that some of them, the flower buds were more mature, and then a lot of them, they weren't quite as mature, but we basically just had to harvest them because it was the end of October, and
winter is coming.
Yeah, winter is coming, and the plants did, for any farmers who might be listening, just so they're aware, we did leave some plants out in the field just to test their cold hardiness, and I don't know, you know, I don't know if this is true for all of the hemp, the high CBD hemp strains, but like, again, ours is in the cherry wine lineage, and it could withstand, the plants withstood temperatures down to the mid-20s.
Oh, wow.
And in the field, but once it got much below that, they died.
Yeah.
And so that being said, we can hit the mid-20s by the middle of October, so that's why we're just, like, really kind of, like, trying to get all these plants out of the field. Our other goals essentially were to not necessarily sell the what's called biomass at that point. We could sell the biomass, and there was definitely some demand for that, but we wanted to take it one step further and get it extracted, just so we could go through the motions, learn about that stage of the refining process and understand that and understand if that's where we want to be. You know, you can kind of like choose, do I want to just... Right. Do I want to just grow seedlings and sell seedlings? Or do I want to actually grow the hemp and harvest it and just sell the dried biomass? Or do I want to take it one step further? And then you're obviously putting more money into the crop to get it processed, which is, you know, something that's kind of familiar to us because we're in agriculture. So if we raise a pig or we raise tomatoes, do we want to sell those and just get more of a wholesale price? Or do we want to take them one step further and get pasta sauce made or get, you know, bacon made. And so we've always kind of been interested in retail products and things like that. So it didn't make as much sense to go all the way to the retail product. And so we kind of wanted to just get to that crude extract form.
Okay. How much biomass did you end up with after the...
I don't have a floor scale, so I'm not quite sure, but it probably was around 1,500 to between 1,500 and 2,000 pounds.
Wow. Okay.
And like I said, I don't think that our yield was quite as good as it could be with better genetics. And so we definitely expect to have better yields this year with better genetics.
So where did you then process it? Where did you do the extraction?
So yeah, we had been in conversation, as I'm sure a lot of hemp farms in PA were, with Thar Process out in Pittsburgh, because there were, at the time, possibly the only extraction facility that is actually up and running and can do extraction work, because they've worked historically in doing extraction for other industries, not for the cannabis or hemp industry, but they manufacture units is what their primary business is. We didn't quite get that scheduled with them by the end of the year, but I had a goal of, we did want to release our own tincture from our own farm grown, because we do have retail customers mm-hmm. who come to the farm here or at the farmer's market, etc. And so, you know, as you can imagine, they've been just like, you know, waiting very patiently for us to produce something for them regarding the hemp, because everyone's very interested in it. And so there's a co-packer in Colorado that we have a relationship with. And so we had a small batch of tinctures scheduled to be made there. So Thar wasn't quite ready yet at the end of the year. So we ended up doing a really small, like 100-pound batch of extraction with another extraction company that is up here in Allentown that okay. doesn't really do extraction work, but they have the units. We got that out to Colorado, and those tinctures are finally just about finished right now. So we should have those within the next few weeks. Then like 2 months later, so we were able to take the almost all of the remaining biomass out to Thar, okay. and they did do the extraction work then for us. And so we actually have 57 kilos of crude extract.
Oh, wow.
That we're selling right now, that's available
wholesale.
For purchase, yeah, for wholesale.
Did you have any trouble in the shipping?
No, which is funny because Kara and I drove out and we loaded up, 1,000+ pounds of cannabis material in the back of the truck, which, you know, any untrained person would. You know, you open the back of that U-Haul truck and it just like comes, the smell comes barreling out at you. And it's like, it'd be really nice not to get pulled over.
Did you have like paperwork?
So we had third party testing, okay. On labeling on everything. I brought my whole big binder of every piece of paperwork possible regarding our hemp permits and everything. And the reason, we were so concerned is because actually, the farm bill had just passed, and everybody was starting to move hemp interstate from state to the other, and shipping hemp all over the country now to extraction companies and buyers and things like that. And there had already been an instance where it was like national news, this like whole tractor trailer load of hemp had gotten pulled over, and the state police tested it. It was tested hot for THC, because there is THC in in all hemp. It tested hot. The drug sniffing dogs were like, yeah, this is definitely marijuana, cause they can't tell a difference either. And so these guys were in a lot of trouble. I'm sure that they'll probably come out fine in the end, hopefully.
But they probably lost their whole harvest.
There's just like, that had been happening throughout the country. And so we were just like, oh, great. Now, you know, but we have no other choice. We just have to just drive it out there.
So, luckily, we weren't, when you pulled in there.
Yeah, we weren't crossing state lines. So I think that that probably helped a little bit too. But no, I mean, we're not afraid of it because we're not breaking any laws and we're not bending the rules or doing anything. You know, we're just anything nefarious. We're just trying to follow the rules as best we can and, you know, and go about our business. And so, yeah, it was successful. we made it.
So in January, the state, you know, takes the acreage cap off. They lower the permitting price. What'd you think about all that stuff?
Yeah, I thought it was great. I mean, I think in every possible case, we should give, you know, a round of applause or just gratitude to everyone who's working on the program at, you know, at the state level, because I know that this is not their job, really. Like, they've just been tasked with this. So it's, and I'm sure that it's in some cases a nightmare, in other cases, like, you know, just a lot of work, you know, to be managing this whole hemp program. And I'm sure their phones are ringing off the hook, their mailboxes are full. So, you know, so I, you know, want to say, like, we're super grateful for all the work that they're doing to make it happen. And then everyone else, like the Pennsylvania Hemp Industry Council, who has, you know, put in a lot of time in the trenches to, like, help move everything forward. And that being said, I think that, you know, I shared a lot of concerns with the Department of Ag last year, and I'm sure a lot of other farms did, because we're all learning together. You know, we're all figuring this out together. And I shared a lot of concerns and ways that I thought the program could be improved, and they implemented a lot of those. I'm not saying because of me, but just in general, I'm 100% certain other farmers were sharing those same concerns. And
can you,
I think,
give
that,
an example of one or two of those concerns and then what they did?
So just various things regarding testing and the timing of testing and things like that, and just being able to do any kind of, like, work with genetics or breeding genetics or phenotyping genetics, especially because a lot of the genetics were not bred for this growing climate. Right. You know, they're bred for, like, dry, arid regions. So that doesn't really necessarily help us here in Pennsylvania, or in the whole Mid-Atlantic region. So we really need to be able to, you know, this is one of the richest agricultural regions in the country, and so we need to have genetics that are relevant to this region. And so they're very open-minded and very open to conversation regarding a lot of that, and being able to source genetics from other states, whereas last year the hemp program was severely handicapped in Pennsylvania, because all of the best, when it comes to CBD, specifically CBD and medicinal hemp type genetics, it was handicapped because all of the best genetics for that focus are within the United States already. So if we can't access those, then we can't grow the best genetics. So things regarding that, and then just things regarding, like, being able to sell seedlings or sell clones or things that a lot of other states are doing already. You know, we're just, if we put restrictions on that, I mean, it's not necessarily good for it to just be a free-for-all, but it's still important that we keep up pace with the way the rest of the country is going if we truly want it to be, you know, a
successful crop in the state.
Yeah. And we really want to help enliven that agricultural element in Pennsylvania, so.
Yeah, because it seems like it could be a game changer for farmers.
For a lot of people, I believe. Yeah, for sure. I know a lot of, we have the plainclothes community in Pennsylvania, and a lot of them have historically grown tobacco as a cash crop, just on a few acre scale. And this is something that a lot of them are looking to maybe, you know, replace that tobacco crop. And I think that's great, because it's actually has health benefits, you know? but I think that's another piece of the conversation too, is just creating a system that is not like a pay to play or a go big or go home or a just like big cannabis kind of industry, you know, that smaller operations. Like if you're a Mennonite dairy farmer and you just want to grow 3 acres of, you historically maybe have been growing 3 to 5 acres of tobacco as a cash crop, you know, it pays your mortgage. You know, you don't really make a lot of money, but it helps pay your mortgage. Well, this could be that for them, you know, and it's important to be able to create scenarios where that can be a viable option. And it's not, you know, you don't need enormous amounts of money to get involved, and you don't necessarily need to be growing enormous acreages to be profitable. So that's, you know, I think that's a really valuable piece. And I think there, you know, the Pennsylvania program is evolving in a way that is allowing for everyone to be able to start to enter the space.
What other changes would you like to see the state enact?
I think that this will ring true for a lot of the farms in Pennsylvania and across the country, which is we just had a little glimpse of this when they originally wrote the 2019 program parameters under the research program, and then the Farm Bill passed and they rewrote the parameters to submit to the federal government. And they had this in there and then they removed it.
Is this about the zones?
And this is about the zone, the proximity rules. And I trust that as farmers, the community will be able to like organize and be able to kind of create like CBD growing regions or things like that. But it is, you know, it is important to be able to have quality of crop in order to, and maybe a CBD medicinal hemp crop won't be the most profitable hemp crop long term, but for now it is.
Right.
And so it'd be really helpful to, I hate to ever suggest more legislation because we're like coming out of that, you know? But that felt like a triumph when they added the proximity of CBD farms.
And you would want that.
Yeah. I think it would be really valuable. And I think that it doesn't have to hinder the industry. And I think that, you know, we can have regional, you know, hemp production styles, essentially.
I'm curious how much of that could be taken care of in, well, one, communication between farmers,
for sure.
And then timing. Like, okay, I'm going to plant mine in June, you plant yours in July, and, you know, our genetics shouldn't really mix pollen-wise.
Yeah, potentially. I mean, there are some genetics that are coming out now in the CBD hemp space that are what they're calling auto flower genetics, so like 90-day maturity. There's like two or three, those still have to be proven to actually be effective, and I know that the yield is going to be much lower per acre on those. You'd have to plant them a lot closer, etc. And so, yeah, I'm not suggesting that I just question why the marijuana program gets preferential treatment, because they have a 3-mile proximity to hemp farms. So hemp farms are on a second tier of priority from the marijuana production. And, you know, I understand why, but I think that the CBD medicinal hemp farms could also be prioritized as well.
Right.
Do
you think it's a matter of who's making money from it? Or
I think it definitely has to do with political influence, probably. But that's going to change real quick because you're going to start to see a lot of people in the CBD hemp industry starting to make a lot of money. So we'll see where it goes. And I don't know. It'll remain a controversial issue, I'm sure. And it's a very controversial issue in other states as well. I think it's important for farmers, you know, we all here on our farm, we've chosen that we're going to go the CBD medicinal hemp route. because that fits with our agricultural production systems. We're, you know, more of a horticultural system than an agronomic. So we're not tooled up to be planting large-scale acreages of fiber crop. And so we're not, that's what we prefer, that's what we're interested in, and that's what fascinates us, and that we're going to continue to focus on. So there's I think that...
What's the size of the farm? How many acres?
So we own 40 acres right here. And this year we'll be growing 8 acres of hemp here.
Oh, okay.
And then we've also started a growers collective. So we're working with 8 other farmers, mostly in eastern Pennsylvania, to basically train them how to grow hemp. They're all vegetable, organic or non-organic vegetable growers that already, just like us, have all the tools and equipment and experience and land to be able to do this. And the only reason that bar is so high when it comes to those things is because we have to build a resilient foundation, and then moving forward, we would like to be able to help bring other farmers into the fold and train new farmers and things like that. They're all basically just like us. They've never grown hemp before. But they, you know, from my perspective, they are all fully equipped to succeed.
Right.
They basically know how to do it already. They just don't know that yet, you know? And so we're working with them, to produce another 10 acres of crops. So they're all doing 1 to 2 acres maximum.
Okay.
Just because they are all growing other crops already and doing what they always do. And we want them to continue to do that. And this way, this can be kind of like a cash crop for them. And then, you know, I expect that they'll probably have a good experience and want to increase their acreage next year. And if we can create a good modular model, we'll easily be able to bring many more farmers into that growers collective.
Does that growers collective have a name?
Well, it's called Keystone Collective, but it's... we're just operating mostly under Wild Fox provisions this year because you can't really start a co-op or a collective until you have the farmers, you know. So we need to assemble the farmers first, and then next year it'll be venturing out onto its own a little more independent of Wild Fox provisions.
Okay, like its own legal status as an entity.
Yeah. And then on the flip side of that conversation, we also took on a business partner. We partnered with Greenhouse Ventures out of Philadelphia. And so that relationship lends itself to a lot of strategic partnerships within the industry with manufacturers, processors, just buyer relationships for the biomass or the premium flower. Mm-hmm. And so we're working on a lot of different relationships in that regard as well. So basically bridging that gap for the farming community so that the farmers can do what they do best and the manufacturing industry can do what they do best, and we can be the intermediary, because that's a huge weak point right now. You know, you see a lot of businesses who have an enormous amount of capital available, and they find a piece of land and they're like, all right, let's grow some hemp. And I think, you know, we saw that last year that it didn't work out so well for a lot of people. And so the idea is to say, we have a rich agricultural community here in Pennsylvania. There's no need to reinvent the wheel.
Right. Let's put this
dots and then everybody can win. And I also think that going back to what I was saying before is that to create a more long-term, more resilient agricultural framework, it has to be a group of growers working together collectively, not just everybody going it alone.
Right.
And that way we have buying power when it comes to seeds and genetics, and, you know, there's kind of like a critical mass, of knowledge and experience and all of that can help propel everyone forward collectively.
Ben Davies, thank you so much for talking to me today.
Sure.
All right, that's Ben Davies, a hemp farmer who farms with his wife, Kara, in Berks County, Pennsylvania. You can learn more about their operation at wildfoxfarm.com. That about does it for me, but before we go, let's check in with my editor, Steve Sieber, to see what's going on in the newspaper this week.
Hello, Steve Sieber, Lancaster Farming.
Hey, Steve, it's Eric, and you're on the podcast. I'm curious what's happening in the newspaper this week.
You know, another busy day in the newsroom. Our news editor, Phil Gruber, has done a couple of in-depth stories that I think will be of great interest to readers. One of them is on stormwater authorities and how their fee schedules impact farmers. That's a big issue, especially with all the rain we've been getting lately last year or so. Also, the need for more butchers in the region. You know, some of our farmers are trucking their animals 3 to 5 hours for processing, so that's a problem. So I would check those two stories out.
All right, I will. Thanks for the update.
Yep, have a good one.
Okay, that's Steve Sieber, editor at Lancaster Farming Newspaper. Couple of things before we go. Be sure to click subscribe in your podcasting app. We are now on Spotify, too, so that's exciting. If you like the show, please share it with one other person in your life. And what else? Oh, if you want to see photos from my trip to Wild Fox Provisions, check out our new Instagram feed, LF Podcast Hemp. And don't forget about that crop yield data form. You can find a link to that on the show page for this episode at LancasterFarming.com. Okay, that does it for me. I am Eric Harlock, digital editor at Lancaster Farming. And until next time, I'll see you in the newspaper. Wait, a couple more things. Today's show is copyright Lancaster Farming 2019. Lancaster Farming is part of the Steinman Communications family. Today's show was written, edited, recorded, and produced by me, Eric Harlock, and any music that you hear is courtesy of Tin Bird Shadow. Okay, thanks.